The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene, yeah, I've been debating with our listeners about this march that's taking place in Paris, the Silent March. And I can't quite decide if the far left and the far right should be banned from it. On the one hand, obviously, we know about the hypocrisy. We know that they, to somewhat, are a cause of the actions of this anti-Semitic behavior that has resulted in the death of an 85-year-old Holocaust survivor. But the reality is, shouldn't, by their marching, are they not sending out a signal to their constituents that they actually don't support this? What's your thoughts?
I must be honest, like you, I've also been a bit torn on that aspect, because there are a lot of the propagators of anti-Semitism.
Rolene, and, you know, I'm just going to stop you right there. I am going to ask Hilton to get you back. It is an important conversation, so I am going to ask him to see if he can get hold of you again. I think it's absolutely vital to be able to talk about this. We've got a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism that is taking place in the United Kingdom. We know that there was a march there. We know that in Paris, an 85-year-old woman was murdered, and people have been arrested for the fact that because of anti-Semitism. It is an incredibly, incredibly important story. We are seeing that ultimately language results in people getting hurt. Of course, that does circle back to the racism issue here in South Africa, which we were speaking about a little bit earlier. Rolene, let's try that one more time.
Okay, so, you know, as we were saying, I'm just as conflicted as you are about whether or not the far right and the far left should be joining this march, because they are the propagators of a lot of this anti-Semitism, and we're seeing it not just in France, where it has now resulted in the most brutal death of a Holocaust survivor who had actually survived the horrendous, what they call in French, the raffle, the selection at the Val d'Ive, at the Velodrome d'Ive in 1942, which sent many of the Jews in France to their death at Auschwitz in Poland and other death camps. But, you know, if we look across the pond to the United Kingdom, and there you have the most appalling examples of the far left and every kind of stereotype, from the mural that we saw that has actually propagated this march that happened in London on Sunday, to again the allegations against Zionists and horrible denial of the Holocaust. You know, they don't seem to be drawing the thread that from the far right and the far left we are seeing the worst kind of hatred spewed. It's the month of March. We have seen it on our campuses across the world, how Jewish students, and especially those who identify as Zionists, are treated on campus. We saw it at UCT and at Wits campus in South Africa, and I just want to take a moment to acknowledge our Jewish students and their many supporters. I know there are many supporters in the Christian community that stood behind our students against this kind of hatred. But where do we draw the line, Howard? Where is enough is enough? And I wonder if some of these far left and far right activists are going because it presents them with a slight easing of their conscience, or a nice photo opportunity, or a sound bite. But the reality is, until they take responsibility and accountability for their role in the spreading of anti-Semitism, and yes, I'm going to put it out there, anti-Zionism and the delegitimization of the State of Israel, which is the modern day anti-Semitism.
It's very interesting. In fact, I'm trying to think where I read it, but there was a fascinating report or a theory by, and it'll come back to me who wrote it, and the headline was, Does Voting for Obama Make Me a Racist? And essentially what it's saying is that sometimes we become more racist because we do the big things. In other words, did racism increase after Obama became president? Not because he did a poor job and people blamed black people, but because people then could get away with saying, well, I'm not a racist, I voted for Obama. and therefore could become racist in other areas. In other words, the grand gesture, the big gestures often allow us to behave poorly in other areas. So is this a big gesture, and does the far left and the far right marching in this march almost allow them, because it gives them credibility, to be anti-Semitic? So therefore they can say, well, I can make that comment about Jews or about Israel. I went to the march.
Well, this is definitely a factor. When you've got somebody like Marine Le Pen, who I just see it as an excuse for her to engage in some petty politicking. She said that she is insisting on attending the march. She, you know, if you are, if can, I know that the CRIF, which is the body that governs all major French Jewish organizations, if they don't want you there, it's probably for good reason. You can't, as you've just said, show the magnanimous gesture, but look, I was there, when you don't do something very, very, very drastic about the anti-Semites that sit on the list of your party.
Absolutely.
And deny the Holocaust.
Absolutely right. And Unsigned says Donald Trump was right about Charlottesville, that it was the far right and the far left.
Well, we know, and that the far right and the far left, as much as they would like to oppose each other, are very much united in this kind of rhetoric and this kind of action. And the same vile diatribe we see from the far right, we are seeing from the far left, only without the tattoos and the tiki torches.
Absolutely.
Just in a different kind of outfit, but it is still the same.
Absolutely fascinating. And, of course, moving across the channel as we've done all week, British Jewish leaders issue a list of demands to the Labour Party.
And at the top of their list is a request to oust the ex-mayor of London, Ken Livingstone. You know, it's one thing, again, and here we have it from a far left candidate who is now rumored to have popped up on 5 Facebook pages. You know what? And I don't buy his excuse that they just aired him without his knowledge. Okay. As the leader of the opposition in the United Kingdom, as somebody who could be prime minister one day, you have a duty to your citizens to make sure that you are not misrepresented.
Absolutely right. There's no question about
that. Top of the list of demands. And kol hakavod to the Board of Deputies in the UK and the rest of the UK Jewish leadership. They have demanded that now ex-Mayor Ken Livingstone be kicked out of the party. And I've just been watching a very, very interesting debate on the BBC where they've basically excoriated a member of the Labour Party and said, you have the Chakrabarti report, which are, in my opinion, was very wishy-washy. Why has it not been implemented? There are over 70 examples of gross anti-Semitism. And the excuse given by the Labour Party is, well, it doesn't make the threshold. Where is that threshold? Mm-hmm. Is the threshold of anti-Semitism the brutal slaughter of an 85-year-old Holocaust victim? Is that where the threshold lies?
Absolutely right. Absolutely, absolutely right. Frightening story indeed. Rolene, there was a story that broke this afternoon, and I'm a little confused by it, where a car rammed into a shop in London. Tell us a little bit about the story.
Well, what we do know is that a car apparently smashed into a pharmacy next to a kosher food shop in Golders Green, which, if you are familiar with London, is very much populated by the Jewish community, as many have been shopping in order to prepare for Pesach, which starts this Friday night. And 2 people were very, very seriously injured. The one person may have life-threatening injuries, and the concern, especially given the current climate in the UK at the moment, is that whether or not this was purposeful or if it was an accident. And Scotland Yard apparently are treating this as an accident pending further investigation, and they have taken one man to a central London hospital with extreme life-threatening injuries, and they're waiting waiting on the update on the second person's condition. However, no arrests have been made. And this maybe especially since I live here in Israel, and we've seen fatalities because of these kinds of car rammings. Here in Israel, they very much are terror attacks, and we've seen them around the world. We have an increased sensitivity around this, especially in light of the current climate.
Absolutely, and it'll be interesting to find out ultimately what the real story was here. Is it being played down, or is it really just a simple accident? The Saudi Crown Prince has met with U.S. Jewish leaders. I spoke to David Efun about this a little bit earlier today from the El Gamana. This is an incredible, incredible event. One would never have thought that this would be possible.
Exactly, and I think Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, many of you will be familiar with Rabbi Boteach. He often commentates on a variety of subjects, including Israel and Jewish issues. He actually wrote an interesting op-ed in the Jerusalem Post saying that if Prince Mohammed bin Salman wants to do something really, really earth-shattering, he will recognize the state of Israel. And are we seeing movement towards that? Last week we inaugurated the first direct flight from India over Saudi airspace, which was also unheard of. And now today we know that the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman met in New York yesterday afternoon. He met with a variety of representatives of major American Jewish groups. And while we don't have exact details, I mean, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that meeting. We do know that this unprecedented event did take place. And apparently he has a nickname, Howard. He's known as MBS.
NBS.
MBS.
Oh, I was going to say like the Natal Building Society.
No. But yeah, he has a nickname now. I mean, he can join Bibi and he can join Bushy.
Absolutely.
And he can join Boogie if he's MBS.
And of course, once he's got a nickname, well, then he's one of us. The interesting thing about it is I do feel that he shouldn't be overly pressured to take bigger steps. We can see that he is taking some major, major steps, not only with regard to his relationship with Israel, but also with what's going on within his own kingdom in terms of allowing more freedom for women, moving the country forward in a progressive manner. And I guess he should be allowed, we can see that he's moving in the right direction. I believe he should be allowed to do this at his own pace. He doesn't need to rush, I think, to recognize Israel. Let him get there. He's certainly doing so just by his actions in any event. What's your thoughts?
Well, exactly. And now he has a nickname, so he's definitely headed down the right path. But also, I think sometimes our fault is expecting too much soon. And sometimes we need to take that little step back and allow for the space for him to do perhaps what he feels is long overdue to do.
Absolutely right. Finally, a very difficult story. IDF soldiers speak up for the very first time, telling media of the horrors of how Egyptian soldiers treated asylum seekers. Sounds absolutely horrible.
It is pretty horrible, Howard. A lot of our soldiers who have served in units that have patrolled the Sinai Desert, where many asylum seekers, and I'm making the distinction between asylum seekers and illegal workers, they haven't spoken for many, many years about their traumatic memories, and now they are starting to speak. And one soldier, he calls himself Staff Sergeant Near Libla, says, "While I was on guard duty, I saw the Egyptians placing them in a row and executing them." Our soldiers have also spoken of the tremendous PTSD that they suffer as a result of witnessing the ill treatment and I'm going to use the word persecution of asylum seekers. The soldiers have said that they encountered asylum seekers who were very, very, very thin, obviously malnourished, starved, many of them having been kidnapped for ransom, beaten, raped, abused. These kind of scars were evident on their bodies. They spoke of many who had died along the way, some of illness and starvation, some murdered by their captors. And one of the stories that is not told is the fact that there are operatives in the Sinai, many of them from Hamas, who actually do kidnap and hold for ransom these asylum seekers, and that the treatment by inflicted on them is absolutely, absolutely horrific.
Very, very frightening indeed. Unfortunately, Rolene Marks, there we leave it. Rolene, I do want to tell our listeners that on Monday, being a public holiday and being the first day of Chol HaMoed, we're going to do something a little bit different on the Israel Report. We're going to have a bit of a longer session between me and you. And in fact, we're going to be talking about Rolene Marks. We're going to unpick your history a little bit and understand how you came to be a warrior for the State of Israel. So we're going to do that. I'm going to interview you, and we're going to look into your story.
I cannot think of a bigger honor, Howard, and I mean that with all sincerity, to be interviewed by you and to share my story, and hopefully it will inspire many of you out there to become warriors for the Jewish people, for the State of Israel. And I really am tremendously proud and absolutely honored to do this.
Awesome. Well, we are already looking forward to that. Time is 5:55. That was your Israel Report, brought to you by the Blue Agency.